Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Sharp Tongue Podcast. I'm your girl, Jessie Mae Peluso. Another day, another dollar. Hope you're doing well. Hope you're thriving through these tumultuous times. Actually, we're coming out of it. You know, we're getting out of the gook. We're starting to get back to life. I'm looking forward to it personally. I just want to be able to run around with my tits out like I did before without anyone screaming at me. I don't know if that was ever a thing, but I'm going to try and turn it into a thing. Thank you guys so much for tuning in every week. Check out the YouTube page. If you listen every week, you know it. Go to youtube.com/Jessie Mae Peluso. Subscribe, like, share. More videos go up every week. If you want to watch the podcast, that's where you watch it. And also, don't forget to hit your girl up on Cameo. I'm on Book Cameo, which is a video app. I can make custom videos for you, your loved ones, your not so well revered ones. Get creative. Book your girl on Book Cameo. And just in general, I want to thank you guys for your support with this podcast. I will be having an announcement coming soon with a collaboration with my girl Carly Aquilino that I am very excited about. We have been hush-hush about through quarantine, but we are very close to releasing the big news. I've leaked it a couple times on accident, on purpose, but that's neither here nor there. So look out for that soon. And welcome to this week's episode. This week's guest is someone who I have been a fan of for years. I have loved his music. He's gotten me through breakups. I've enjoyed his music through relationships and beyond. This week's guest is Clarence Greenwood, aka Citizen Cope. He's an American songwriter, producer, and performer, and his music is commonly described as a mix of blues, soul, folk, and rock. His compositions have been recorded by Carlos Santana and Dido. Remember Dido, y'all? Damn, what is this? Throwback Thursday? He is just an amazing musician. I've seen him live a few times, and he just recently recorded an album, which I listened to, and it's fantastic. And I kind of nerd out on today's episode just because I am an actual fan. We have met a few times, so I feel very fortunate that I'm able to even have him on the podcast. He's a little bit of an elusive creature, but you must listen to Citizen Cope, his 2002 album, the Clarence Greenwood recordings, Every Waking Moment, the Rainwater LP, and Heroin and Helicopters from 2019, which is, I think, a title he got from, I feel like, is it Richard? Who's the guy who should be dead by now? From Rolling Stones, Keith Richards. I feel like one of those legendary rockers gave him inspiration for the title of that album. But he also has a new album out called The Pull of Niagara Falls. He is here today to talk with us. And I really, really hope you enjoy today's episode with one of my favorite musicians, Mr. Clarence Greenwood.
Sharp Tongue Podcast. Beep, 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 beep. You're listening to the Sharp Tongue Podcast. I'm your host, Jessie Mae Peluso.
It's a personal look.
Well, it's not really a look because it's a podcast. I'm already fucking this up.
This is kind of like a verbal comedy diary,
a deep look into the crevices of my mind. It's going to get dirty.
You might cry. You probably laugh. Hopefully you'll laugh. The whole point is for you to laugh, but you also might cry.
I talk about my family. I talk about farts. I talk about love, loss, comedy, how hard it is to make it in this biz. I'm a fucking professional. Each week it's something different. Sometimes I have a guest host. Sometimes it's going to be a movie companion episode. Sometimes I just ramble about the bullshit I dealt with the week before. You never know what you're going to get. It's raw, uncut, and funny. It's me.
I'm muted. I'm so excited I was muted. Hey, everybody. You've already heard the intro. He needs no intro. He's one of my favorite musicians, and he's been kind enough to let me come out and see him perform live a couple times, and I highly suggest it. Everybody, welcome. You know him as Citizen Cope, Clarence Greenwood. What's up, brother?
Hey.
How you doing? You look fantastic.
Oh, you do too. Thank you.
We're both in our Johnny Cash black. I like that we're rocking this right now.
Only way to go.
It's the only way to go, truly. You know, one of my friends told me I dress like a ninja, and I said, well, you know what? I'm going to sneak up on you, do my thing, and then leave. You know, as an artist, you just a little drop in the bucket, do your performance, and head on out.
It's like the Lone Ranger.
It is like the Lone Ranger. I have so many questions for you. I was studying some stuff last night, and also because I've been such a big fan of yours for so many years. I guess one of the first things I want to ask you, which may be a cliche question, but to me, it's a narrative of your life a little bit. Why music? What drew you to music? Because that's not a life that I chose. You know, I chose comedy, which is totally different, but you chose music. What drew you to that?
I think it was just kind of something to be able to express myself. And then I wasn't necessarily good in school, and I didn't, you know, test take well and those kind of things. So it wasn't going to be easy for me to take a kind of a line to be a professional. And then I just started writing poetry, and then really enjoyed like the idea of production, and was passionate about listening to records, and then like wanted to see how you could do it. And it was just one step, but it wasn't ever a thing like, oh, this is what I want to do, until, you know, a little bit later.
Isn't it interesting? You know, people sometimes when they get into careers, like medical careers, you know, they know they want a doctor. They know they want to be a lawyer. I feel like those more straight and narrow careers, people kind of choose. But when you're an artist, it finds you.
Yeah.
It's something that sort of evolves. As a child, like, who were some of your biggest inspirations? Because your music to me, and music obviously is so personal, and your interpretation of it as a listener is really dependent upon where you were at in your life. But who were your inspirations? You know, because your music to me is so eclectic. It's so unique to you. When I try and explain your style to somebody, I start off and I say a singer-songwriter, but there's so much more there. There's so much depth to your music. So I'm interested to know who inspired you when you were younger.
I think I was lucky enough to have a lot of different music around me. So I traveled to different places in the United States. So I was able to hear stuff. And I think that I think one of the first records I remember was the Jackson 5, and then moved on to kind of what my sister was playing, the pop stuff, and then the classics that my parents had and stuff like that. And you would have, you know, from Otis Redding to Neil Young to Fleetwood Mac and all that kind of stuff. Listening to, you know, Jimi Hendrix and the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, went through that stage of like the classic rock stage. And then when hip hop came along, and I was in DC. So go-go was a huge influence on me. Like, it's a kind of a go-go music is a DC kind of classical music that they play in DC. So I was heavily influenced by those guys. And then when hip hop came, and then the songwriting of John Lennon, and I enjoyed Randy Newman's stuff, and, you know, obviously like Marvin Gaye was huge influence.
Oh, Marvin Gaye is so Marvin Gaye, man. That's the one thing, like, I appreciate having been exposed to such good music as well. You know, you and I feel are similar in our age groups, and I've heard and have read, you know, your opinion on today's music, and I share that opinion. You know, today's music, I feel, is devoid of soul. And that's the one thing that's your music is just filled with it. It's absolutely filled with soul. And it's evident when you go to one of your live shows, it's such a homogenous crowd. Like, you have the best fans. Everyone is so chill. You go to your shows, you don't have to worry about somebody throwing a fucking beer bottle across the room, which is nice.
Right.
I don't know if that's ever happened to you on stage, but your music is just, it attracts a really dope fan base. I wonder, has anything crazy ever happened to you when you were on stage where you were like, what the fuck? Who brought this dude to this show?
Well, yeah, there's a couple of those instances, and you try to be protective because, like, you know, in the past, you know, there's been a lot of women and stuff. So it's it comes to a thing of now people are coupled up, and but so everyone's even more you know, chill. But there was a girl fight one time, and then like,
yeah, there was
like,
absolutely, are you kidding me?
And I think it was during Sideways, and it's like I hate watching girls. I don't like anyone fighting, but two girls fighting, it's just like that fucking hurts my heart, you know. And then like,
well, it's just the way girls fight is it's like watching creatures. It's not like watching humans.
It's vicious.
It is so vicious because they go for the hair. They go for the things that girls spend the most money on. They're ripping lashes. They're ripping hairs. Things are flying off of them. That's funny. Yeah. You know, and I was thinking about, you were on stage when this happened, but I know you know this story. When I saw you at, where was it? In Huntington Beach. I think you were at that really, like that really intimate, dope venue. I can't think. Oh, do you remember that? When
Yep.
Do you know what the story I'm talking about? There.
What's the name of that? The Saint. Is it
the Saint?
Saints.
What's Saint.
What's that place in Hermosa Beach?
Yeah, Hermosa Beach.
Saint Rock.
Saint Rock. Yes. Thank you. Is that Taylor in the background? Thank you so much. Appreciate you. I went there and I was excited because the guy I was dating at the time was also such a huge fan. And I turned to him. I'm sure you know the story because we've talked about it, to share my excitement. And I had taken a sip of my beer and then I choked on my beer because I was hyperventilating and turned and end up spitting all of my beer on Brew.
On Brew? Yes.
I soaked Brew.
Oh my God.
I literally, and this is pre-COVID, so guys, don't worry, don't panic. But I literally doused him in his face with my beer spit. And I just stood there because he was going to get on stage. You guys were like starting. And I just was so mortified. I'm like, I'm a huge fan.
I think you told me about this. That was you, Jesse May.
That was me. He's like, you're a huge fan. I hate to see what you do to people who you don't like.
Oh,
I was so embarrassed. Oh my God. Well, you know, it's so interesting as a comedian, you know, a fellow artist, and I've spoken to so many different types of artists on my podcast. I'm a firm believer that a lot of us artists, comedians, musicians, painters, a lot of our inspiration comes from pain and trauma and our communication with the world through those things. I wonder, like, what were some of the hardships you endured as a child, and if that's something you're willing to discuss? Because I don't know much about that sort of path that maybe you were on, if that's something that has inspired your art and your music.
I think I was definitely inspired by just I think that there was obviously, like, as an artist, you have tendencies to be more empathetic in situations and those kind of things. And, like, you know, I think all of us have our own personal struggles and our own cultural struggles. But I didn't really have any cultural struggle except for the different parts of the country I was living in.
Yeah, you definitely grew up in some, you were in some tough places. You're from a tough place.
Well, I was raised in D.C. at a time it was kind of crazy. Where I lived in D.C. wasn't necessarily like I lived in an area where there wasn't like a lot of violence going down. I don't like to call it a good neighborhood because I think that like I don't think it's a bad neighborhood if things bad are happening there. But I think there was just it gave me a chance to see what was really going on with the education and the history of Washington, D.C. and like kind of an insight to why that had happened. And it answered some really interesting questions because being born down south and also kind of seeing Washington, D.C. where it was it was institutionally racist as far as the policy for the actual city of Washington, D.C. with education and with real estate. And so Yeah, I think it just gave me insight to what, you know, kind of the institutional racism that the actual city of D.C. had to endure as far as like with that, the federal government, you know, paying the bills for the education and for, you know, having obviously real estate kind of laws that didn't allow people to, you know, maintain their houses and keep their houses or even buy houses in certain neighborhoods. So it gave me kind of an insight to that by going to public school in DC and seeing how bad it was. And also being in kind of the deep South, also seeing more of an overt kind of operation in that and seeing the nuances of what, you know, what that was. So like, obviously, my father's side of the family was from Texas and my mother's side of the family was from Tennessee. So they split up early and I moved to DC.
It's interesting with your music. I also come from a broken home. My mom moved the neighbor's dad in when I was 9. So that was fun. I was like, when's Steve leaving? He just stayed forever. He's still there. My mom's dead and he's still in the house.
Steve showed up. The next door neighbor showed up.
One of my favorite aspects of your music, and I hate to say persona because you're not a person who is a persona, but for lack of a better term, your aura is you're mysterious. And not that it is a conscious decision, but your music is biographical more, in my opinion. You know, you're telling stories, and, you know, as someone who's also a fan of like Bob Dylan and Neil Young, who are also storytellers, I wonder, and this is a personal question, how much of yourself exists within these stories, or is it a result of what you've witnessed? Because there is a, you know, there's, you're saying so much in your music. There's social commentary, there's political unrest, there's people who are struggling. And I wonder where's Clarence in all of that? Because it's, to me, it's, you paint these beautifully vivid stories, and I appreciate that mystery. And I wonder where are you in that? Or are you completely separate of it? You're just a vessel for these stories that you're singing about.
Well, like a good example of that is like Sun's Gonna Rise. I'm talking about driving a car and going to the hospital, and my wife is pregnant and is having a son. And it was kind of like, that was the analogy I used. I didn't have a child. I didn't have a wife. But that was the analogy that I was using for kind of awakening and discovery and all this kind of other stuff that can lead to that. But I used the analogy of that.
What type of environment for you yields the most creativity? Because it's, for me as a comedian, creating sometimes is arduous and exhausting, and I can't imagine how difficult it can be for you. So what environment do you find yourself being the most creative? What do you need set up? Like, do you need like, you know, a nice like room you can hot box? You need some Cheetos, maybe a hot plate of mac and cheese. I'm projecting here, but what do you need to flow?
I need to try all that stuff. You gave me some good ideas. Cheetos. That might be the case.
Cheetos is the cure.
Yeah. I kind of like the woodshed. I think it's cool to like, I used to I'd go to Jamaica or whatever and kind of run on the beach and write songs during the morning and then the afternoon and kind of at night and just not be around anybody. I did that for a while. I think woodshedding is important, like early on, also just spending a lot of time writing and developing, you know, as an artist. And I think sometimes you can't have a great place to be creative. So I was just in an efficiency apartment, just singing and writing all the time. And then got up to a bigger place and spent a lot of time doing that. And studios, I guess it's always cool to get a good vibe in a studio for creativity. You know, you kind of, I think a lot of times you feel something good or not. And sometimes the studios are not very good and the vibe's not great, but it sounds great.
That's interesting. I never considered we're both artistic, but to record a comedy album versus recording a musical album, it's the environment and the parameters and the setup is totally different. You know, there is a level of control when it comes to comedy albums as far as the lighting and the camera. But I would imagine recording a studio album, the vibe has just got to be right. You've got to find.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird. It's sometimes it's you have to have a great vibe. But yeah, definitely you have to have a great vibe. But I've had places that don't seem like a great vibe turn out to be, you know, the great stuff that I end up keeping. So it depends on the way the studio sounds. And I mean, with live shows with you guys, it's like you have the audience and that's amazing to have that chance to have that audience and that interaction. And then it can be caught on the real time vibe of that. And I've always said like a great stand-up comedian is like the hardest thing to do, like to be that, like to me, I would think that's kind of like, you know, over a great musician even.
That's funny, because I would say the same thing about music, you know. It's such a, you know, it's such a different art form, but I appreciate you saying that. You know, I always reference one of my friends, Lori Kilmartin, a really funny comedian who in the middle of her set, a hard bread roll got thrown at her face and she had to recover from that and figure out what to do from having a chunk of bread thrown at her face. And she was gluten-free and she was very triggered. What have you done during this whole quarantine? Have you been going fucking crazy? Like, you're a touring maniac. You're on the road. So how have you, as an artist, someone who enjoys that live performance, what have you done to survive or thrive during this?
Man, I kind of realized I've been touring too much. That's
me too.
I was just like, okay, all right. It's that fragile, you know. But it's something that I've been planning on slowing down for years and never did. So it was like almost kind of happened and was a great kind of way to kind of reset and realize just other things creatively that I could do, other things that I had clear up in business and all that other stuff. So
you want to do things other than music. I would imagine, you know, you're a creative person. You had Cooking with Cope for a hot minute, right? You still doing that?
Still doing Cooling with Cope.
Cooling with Cope. Yeah. That's so, I didn't realize you were a foodie like that.
Well, I realized going out on the road, there's all these great places I go to. So we had some cameras and we just made it like a bootleg TV show called Cooling with Cope. It wasn't like, but we just put it on YouTube. So there are issues out there, but we hit different places, Oyster Bar, Cool Distillery. I was really kind of do a lot of bigger thing on this when the tour got canceled, and I plan on doing it when we do in January to kind of expand that just going to really good places that I like in the past. And
yes, getting that quality. It's, you know, it's one thing that I hope a lot of people have realized, and it sounds like you have shared in that sentiment, realizing the quality of life.
Yeah.
The quality of time and energy and food and people that you let into your being, how much that can affect the outcome of everything, your relationships, your overall health, and health is wealth, and your performance. So I think that's an amazing gift that quarantine has given a lot of us. If people have been open to that. I also realize I could drink wine 7 days a week and be okay. I don't know if you have tea in there, but I'm just going to go ahead and say it's whiskey. Tea,
but I'm well known for drinking wine 7 times a week.
Did you, you are a father. I wonder how did your life and art evolve becoming a father?
Just emotion of love that you have that I was just really privy to, and that, you know, blessed to have that kind of feeling of love for somebody, or just love somebody giving you that much love. It's like,
yeah,
when somebody gives you that much love, that is kind of just in, you know, can't take care of themselves. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. It's, and I also love that, you aren't one of these parents who blasts your child out on social media. I really respect that, because so many people are like, look, Trevor Jr. farted. And it's like, we don't care.
Right,
not that,
right.
You know, we wouldn't care to see her, but I also think preserving their energy and being is a valuable commodity that people are just not even thinking about in today's society with social media.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that.
She's too much competition, because like, if I put a picture of her up, it's like, mm-mm. she gets all the likes.
It's I've seen pictures of her, and one word I can describe her, and I mean this in all love and kind, it's jarring how beautiful of a being she is. She's an avatar. She's just the most beautiful thing. And I bet she has you wrapped around her finger.
Yep. Pretty much.
I think that's a beautiful thing. You know,
as beautiful she is on the outside, she's just like a really good person too.
That's amazing, because my niece and nephew are fucking assholes. I have to be honest. They're so cute. I bring him a gift. He's like, where's the rest of it? I'm like, Elliot, I could bring him a whole house, and he'd be like, where's the pool? It's a huge character flaw. Clarence is a huge character flaw.
She, I feel bad, because, you know, I always give people money on the street and stuff, and I gave her some money when she was going to surf camp, and she ended up giving it to somebody, like a homeless guy. And I was like, do you know? And I kind of like, you shouldn't have given him the whole thing. And then it was like $20. I was like, you gave him the whole, like he took the whole thing. And it was
you almost kind
of, and then I felt bad about it, because I was like, I shouldn't, you know, she just knows that. Well, here she is. Oh my goodness. You want to get on? What are you doing?
Hello.
She's in school.
You're about to feel bad about telling everybody. A live audience.
All right.
After every waking moment, you launched your own label. And I'm wondering, what did anything specifically inspire that move for you?
Well, I think what's important when you sign with a record company is to have like a record man. And that's like somebody who understands music and understands the business and kind of understands a vision of kind of how to meet what you do artistically and evolve it. And, you know, there's been some really great record men in the business. And at this time, like, I got transferred around to different roles of Sony and stuff, and I didn't feel like I had that record man in to work with, you know. So it was just, and then I realized that the deals I was doing were with corporations, and those companies could, you know, dissolve or, you know, be kind of transferred, the assets be transferred to another part of the industry or another company. So I kind of wanted to have that ownership, but I do miss that real like connection with a real person that's done a lot of big records, and then having the ability to call them up and be like, hey, what do you think of this? You know, I think that that was like really what I was attracted to signing to majors in the first place, you know, because there's a lot of people that help great artists make great records.
Absolutely. But I think what you've done with yourself and taking that leap away from, like, away from the industry, still in the industry, but making your own path is so much more difficult. It's such a risk. And so many people would, artists would rather be led through the industry. So I think it's really dope that you had the balls and the vision to do that for yourself. You know, in this industry, there's so much that we can do as artists to create for ourselves. And one of the first hurdles we have is us. You know, we're in our own way. So it's just really admirable to see that. It's inspiring, really. You know, it's, I have a couple comedian friends who have paved their own way, like Andrew Schultz and Tim Dillon, who just, industry didn't want them. They're like, all right, well, and I'm not saying that's what the deal is with you, with music, but right. In that sense where the industry doesn't give you any love, you got to give yourself love. Because you know what ends up happening, ironically? The industry comes back around like, hey, what's going on in there, bro? Looks like a fun party. And it's like, we're good. We got everything we need.
We were around since the beginning.
We were around since the beginning. What are you talking about, bro? I was at your house and you didn't even notice me. So, you know, when I think of you, and speaking of industry, one of my favorite things about you is that you aren't necessarily an industry darling. And I say that as a compliment because I look at the industry, the music industry and entertainment industry, but the music industry specifically, which I have a connection to because two of my cousins are in the music industry. One works for Atlantic and the other one started with Def Jam Records years ago. She was running coffee for the CEO when it was a one-room office in Bushwick. So I know a lot about the music industry on that end from the hip-hop and rap side.
Right.
I think radio is pure trash now. And I wonder what your biggest gripe is with the music industry, both historically and currently. I wonder, as an artist who's sort of been on both sides now because you have your own label, what was the worst part about it in the past and what is frustrating about it now?
Well, I think, I mean, first of all, I'd like to say the best part of it is that it, you know, brought us a lot of great music. Mm-hmm. And I think the worst part about it has been the relationship between the artist and the industry. And that's been unfortunate because really kind of the secret is that the artist kind of has his lane and the managers and the promoters and the record companies and the agents are kind of like they're that's the industry and the
right.
artist is kind of in there. And if there is a lot of success with the artist and he has a long-term career and has been lucky enough to have it, but it's just very rare that like artist has one label or one manager in their whole career, or one agent. So I think there's something, the synergy is not working. The ecosystem's yeah. not working in that. So that's kind of like something I deny or just, you know, I think that's not a great thing. And obviously ownership of people's copyrights and stuff like that. And that was part of why I kind of stepped out of it. It was the ownership of copyrights for a long time. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of that I had to do that to get exposure and everything. And I wasn't able to get on the radio or get marketed and all that stuff. So I didn't really have the purpose. I really didn't use the A&R at that point. So the purpose was really kind of an advance and I was
right.
making enough money on the road.
It's another thing. It's like, you know, I'm a huge 90s hip hop fan, you know, and I got to do a pilot. I shot a show with Chili from TLC and I lost my mind. But, you know, when I think about the music industry, I think about artists like TLC, one of my favorite growing up, who got royally screwed by their label. They were all broke. None of them are making money. So I understand that as a, you know, just a, I guess the way the industry has been laid out historically is just, it's not conducive for the artist to really thrive. You know, it makes the artist almost like a, not a prisoner, but tethered to commercialism and tethered to a corporation.
Well, it's completely changed. You're right. And I think it's just the end game is now to be, to get Revlon or whatever, this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's like that. And I don't think there's a problem with doing campaigns with other brands if that's what your dream was at some point. But I think the artistry is just not long, hasn't been held on the long-term standard of, you know, Bob Marley.
Right.
Or you know, these kind of artists that have been able to endure their sound and throughout time, and I think will continue. So there's just that level of the fact that also that the founder got, you know, early on the founder was the person that ran the record company. So the
right.
founder, like Chris Blackwell, was the founder of Island Records, just like, you know, Steve Jobs was the founder of Apple.
Right.
Or, you know, he had an impact on how that company does. So right now, when a founder like Daniel Ek or Steve Jobs goes to negotiate with record company chairmen and presidents who aren't founders, they're just paid, essentially, employees. They're not going to win that battle. You know,
yeah.
it's too much. They're not going to win that negotiation. So a lot of those industries got built off of music. So it's like, it's just like, that's another problem with it, is just they haven't realized how much potential they have. And chasing after the one thing. It's like, let's get a hit now, but their catalog is immense. There's no reason why, you know, Gladys Knight and people like, you know, Patti LaBelle and you know, Anita Baker and Willie Nelson and these type of people still have big record deals.
Yes.
You know, they should definitely have, if not, you know, because they've had millions of dollars invested in their career over the years. So it's not like you're going to lose any money putting out one of those artists' music.
It does seem kind of like something's missing. You know, for me, I always have the conversation of having people on my team who mean well, agents, and they're like telling me what I should do and how I should do it. And I'm like, oh, cool. So how long have you been doing stand up? Oh, you haven't done it before. All right. So why don't we find some way to communicate where I can handle the art side and you guys can sort of handle pushing the career along? It's interesting how between comedy and music, there are those parallels, those sort of holes in the overall industry and how the process works, where it almost feels like it can't work because there's people who are the gatekeepers telling an individual how to do a job they've never done. So it's interesting now in today's society, seeing artists be able to take their career in their hands. And do you believe with what's going on today with the industry, music industry and entertainment industry, do you think that it's different now because of social media, that people should be able to thrive more as artists? Do you think that the road is paved a little bit easier today compared to how it was yesterday, where you were dependent on a label?
I mean, I think you're still dependent on a label. I think you need the exposure of a major corporation, you know, because they're the gatekeepers of radio. They're the gatekeepers of television. Still have a lot of connections in advertising, licenses, and all this kind of other stuff. So I think they have the potential once you get it to a point, take it to a bigger place. And so, you know, with that, you have that, but you still have the ability to kind of like build a buzz, and there's just more people. And the fact is, it's like, it's always about the first 100 people in the room. And before it's the first 100 people in the room, it's the first 20 people in the room. You know, that's always the most important thing, and trying to creatively build that if you can.
Yeah.
And have people that understand if you send them something you like musically, or I'm sure you with your material, it's like you kind of trust if somebody likes it, if you like their, if there's somebody that you kind of trust if
right.
you're on the right path or something like that. I think that's important.
It is really important to sort of have somebody that can have a bird's eye view of what you're doing and know what you've done and if it's good enough to put out. You know, I have an assistant I've worked with for a couple years now. She's watching and she's in our studio, and she was a fan before we started working together. And to me, that was so important to trust somebody. Yeah. Like to, you know, trust somebody who actually loves what I do and knows what I've done from day one, to have them step in when I need them to, you know. It's definitely a sort of trust thing where you're creatively doing things and putting things out, but sometimes you just need a fucking break. Sometimes you just need like somebody else to go, yeah, this is good, this is bad. You need to like maybe veer over here and get away from the dick jokes and go towards something more cerebral. I thought of a question for you because touring is coming back, and I'm hoping I can see you because you're going. Can I say where you're going to be? Because this is coming out the week you will be there already.
Oh yeah.
So you're going to be in New York at City Winery, which is a great venue. And I'm hoping I can come see you. I'm trying to make that work logistically. Yeah. What is, when you travel, now we're starting to go back on the road, which fucking thank God. I know you said you're going to travel less, but let's be real. God bless. What is one of the first things you do when you get into a town, you're traveling? What's like the first thing you do? Do you have a ritual?
It depends. It depends what city. I mean, it's usually I'm just on a bus and I'm just pulling up. You know, I guess get coffee and do my thing.
What about like someplace like Nashville, Tennessee, or someplace in the South where you know the food is going to be? Like, so I just wonder what you eat.
Like in New York, I'll go to Bar Petey for lunch. They got really good pasta. That's over on 6th Street. Another Cope spot is on Cornelia. And it's Pearl Oyster Bar, and they have like the best fish sandwich there.
Oh my God.
And they only serve it till 2:30. And if you get there at 2:30, they won't serve it for you. So they got this halibut sandwich. They've been using skate recently, but that's good. Obviously, Joe's Pizza's right in that area.
I mean,
you know,
the food in New York is just. It is. It's the greatest in the world because you can get it at all hours of the night.
Yeah,
it's truly magical. I was doing some research about your new album and The Pull of Niagara Falls, which I listened to and I love it. I love it for so many reasons. One of which, I think a lot of the songs actually were written in the 90s. Some of them that you used?
Late 90s, yeah. It was before my first record came out, and it was supposed to be for my first record that Capitol Records didn't put out, and I got dropped, and they didn't let me record the record, so I went and recorded a whole new record for the DreamWorks record when I got signed with them and Universal. And so put out that, and, you know, never always knew those songs were great, and then came back and was like, let me just play them on guitar like I wrote them. And so I did four songs or five songs like that, three new songs and a cover of a Randy Newman song.
In Shotgun, it stuck with me.
Yeah.
Tell me about that. Tell me about, give us a little insight on Shotgun.
The whole song was kind of, the first record was going to be called Shotguns, and it's named after, it kind of dealt with the shotgun as the theme of America, is like a theme of fear. And it kind of had such a parallel to so many things, which was like mass incarceration and all these things that I was seeing kind of revolved around fear. And obviously racism and these other things that kind of really set a pulse as a songwriter, building my songwriting the way it would kind of come out. And, you know, used some uncelebrated characters. One of the songs is about broken family and, you know, kind of like a father telling his son why he couldn't be in his life. And there's, you know, pretty much kind of like a song that I used to heal myself.
Yeah.
Which is kind of my story, but I didn't. I sang in the perspective of my father. So it was kind of like a healing moment to be able to get to that point. And then Shotguns was dealing with kind of like the prison system and how it affected, how these mass incarceration was happening, and, you know, how it affected the city and also the rural places where these places were being built. You know, it's kind of a place where that was their income, was these,
right?
So it's like,
which is so fucked up.
Yeah. So it just, and so I kind of touched on that, and it touched on like accidental homicide, and so not really happy themes. you know, but if somebody even called me, is like, what's wrong with you, man? Are you all right? And I'm like, man, I'm good, man. This is just an old record, but this is like, I was in this space right here. And
that's honest.
The record kind of took it. But it's not celebrated. It's not victorious, but it's enduring and it's persevering. And I think that's what life is about. You know, it's about taking losses sometimes, but also the thrill of victory and perseverance is not always a path it's a path. It's not an end game.
Yeah. And I think this album resonates and will resonate with the year we've had.
Yeah.
This year, talk about enduring. I mean, every individual has gone through some form of loss and needing to find a beacon and a lighthouse. So the album, as I was listening to it, I was thinking also about the year everyone has had and the year that I have had, and it ends up, you know, it's like this, the trajectory of it is so aligned with life in general, but also the year we have. So it was just interesting when I read that some of the songs were from the 90s, how you made it all evolve and work and fresh, and also a throwback, but kept it all to be this sort of beautiful story of a year we've all kind of had in one way or another. So right. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was amazing. Yeah.
It's kind of like the pool of Niagara Falls. It has the, you know, it's like we have the pull to live and also the gravitational pull to fall. And so it's something we as artists kind of go in, cut a fine line, you know, between, you talked about self-sabotage earlier.
Mm-hmm. It is, I mean, the ebb and flow of an artistic career. I'm sure you've seen a lot of your friends not come out of the ebbs.
Yep.
And you've seen a lot of your friends get too cocky in the flow. And it's about sort of realizing that both those things have to exist for the other to exist. And on the other side is some sort of personal salvation that you can share with the world and be of service. to people. Speaking of being of service to people, I have some questions from fans. Okay. Would you like to answer a couple?
Sure.
I'm going to pick some of my favorites. Kiki loves Fox. It's interesting. Hopefully that's not an actual animal that she loves. Okay. Dream artist collaboration.
Oh, Sade, I guess.
Ooh! Ooh! I wasn't ready for that answer. Clarence, where is she? Why is she hiding? Get her out of hiding.
Out of reach, out of touch.
Oh, God, she, can we, I can't, I mean, forget it. Ooh.
That fortress is so deep.
Ooh.
That fortress is so deep around that angel that's not.
Ooh. I mean, these kids don't know. These kids don't know. Sade, best answer. I feel like I don't even want to ask any more questions, but I'm going to, because I promised a bunch of these people I would ask. 516 Lemmy Girl is a huge fan of yours. She personally messaged me to make sure that I saw her question. She says, your fan base in Australia is insane. All caps.
Really?
She says your fan base there is strong and thick.
I don't believe her.
And she says, do you know why Aussies love him so hard?
Why?
She wants to know, because you're magic. That's what she fit that all in a really small box. I thought it was impressive.
Beautiful. I can't wait. We're trying to get work out Australia, and kind of one of the problems was it never got properly released over there when I was putting records out. So it didn't kind of, you know, catch on. But what I'm finding out about the music is it's just catching on everywhere. Like Brazil is doing stuff right now, and it's like there's like places that never heard it because it wasn't released there and now are catching on through like word of mouth.
Well, I asked you this question, but this guy is a huge fan and a really amazing swordsmith. He made me a very custom, beautiful coffin sword that I don't know what I'm going to do with. I feel like I'm going to get arrested, but I'll probably go to Trader Joe's with it and just put all my produce on it. He says, who inspires you other than a musician and why?
Henri Cartier-Bresson was a great photographer. I really enjoy his work.
That's crazy because I studied him in school.
Yeah, I love him.
The French photographer who takes like one take of his photos.
Yeah, he's pretty amazing. Some great interviews with him over the years. I really like his stuff.
That's wild.
As far as just, I mean, inspiration kind of comes from, you know, philosophy. Music, art, life.
Yeah, just living. Let me tell you, food is the greatest inspiration.
All the places in the world and eat.
When you go to New York, I will message your assistant so you remember this, but maybe you've eaten there. Have you gone to Veselka?
Where is that?
Homie, listen, when I tell you, you have to go to Veselka. It used to be open before quarantine, 24 hours a day. It is a, it's a diner, but it's Yugoslavian. Oh God. The country. Right. It's a Eastern European country and it's probably not Yugoslavian and they're probably swearing at me right now. Debbie, I can see Debbie Googling it right now. Ukrainian. It's on 9th and 1st.
Oh, wow.
It is, and I'm telling this because I've said it before on the podcast. If you're in New York and you don't go to Veselka, you've wasted really good food time. So go there, get some sausage and pancakes. It's delicious. Okay, this is a good question. Lenisi is my name. Sorry if I butchered that. Can you see the story of your songs when you're writing them?
Yeah, definitely like Pablo Picasso and Sun's Gonna Rise and that kind of stuff. Like Brother Lee kind of has a real visual kind of thing. And
Brother Lee seems like a tough song to play if you're an iota drunk. That song is like,
that's just the energy gets up there at that point.
That song is so dope. That's one of my favorite songs. It's a fun live song to listen to.
It's a real fun live song.
Speaking of live, Janesha Wallace, your most uncomfortable live performance. P.S. I'm always front row of your NC concerts. So whenever you're in North Carolina, this individual is there.
All right. Well, thank you for being out there. I appreciate that. Thank you. The most uncomfortable concert.
Was it when I spit on brew?
I spent a lot of open mics getting, talked over. When I started coming out, I used to do a lot of shows where a lot of people chatted. So it was kind of like those kind of aren't the most comfortable shows. Because you feel for the other people that
it's the worst
paid. And then there's people chatting and like 10 or 20 people can mess up a vibe.
Yeah. I mean, like I said before, your live audiences are just, it's the most, I think one of my favorite reasons besides your music and, you know, the fact that I have like a connection with you is that your fans are so amazing. Like it's literally the most relaxing, safe. It feels safe. As a woman, that's a huge thing. You know, I know I'm not going to have some strange man's finger in a place I don't want it at your show. So thank you for that.
Exactly. Especially not your drink.
Thank you. Thank you so much for that.
Yeah.
I'm about to ask you one of my favorite questions.
All right. I'm ready.
Dan 2425 says, are you still between a bullet and a target? So stupid.
Dan.
Is that so stupid? Fucking Dan. Dan.
You know,
I did it
I'm
for you.
I always put myself in between a bullet and a target somehow, but I wrote the song to remind myself to stay out of those situations. So I'm trying
That's
to steer
thing.
Clear of being put between a bullet and a target.
That's interesting because a lot of the jokes I write are to remind me to not date assholes. So there's a parallel there. There's a lot of preaching going on in my comedy, and a lot of it, most of it is me preaching to myself. So we're similar in this sense.
Is it hard to date in Los Angeles?
Dating in Los Angeles, it's impossible. It is absolutely, it's a dinosaur. It used to be there, but now it's not. Because a meteor hit the whole place and everyone's dead. Everyone's dead and on their phones and worried about what they look like on social media.
Right.
I'm fine with the fact that I may die alone when I'm of llama, like a whole bunch of llama. I think that might be where I'm headed and I'm totally cool with it, you know?
Four lightning strikes.
Last question, because for some reason it's buffering so much more. And Rudy, I love you so much. I'm so sorry for all the editing you're going to have to do. Ruby Foster wants to know, and I want to know, and everybody else in the state, when are you coming to California?
Well, 2022, playing a theater show in LA and then probably Fillmore in San Francisco. I'm not sure where in San Diego.
So it's happening. We're starting to get back on the road. People can rest assured they'll see you. I guess the last question I want to ask you before I let you go to finish your tea and to play your guitar and do your wind down for the evening is what advice, if the Wi-Fi fucking will just be chill for a minute, what advice can you give to any artist in this current climate? What advice can you give to them starting out or a way to thrive if they're unrepresented?
I just think listen to and follow your first instinct and then like take action on stuff and don't be denied by no. You hear a lot of no's. So it's just like basically that's part of your path. It makes you stronger. Something brought you to it. So jump in.
It's beautiful. I mean, you just got to jump in and trust yourself. If you're a performer, you just got to keep going.
You got to do it. That's the calling that happened. You know, it's the business we chose. That's what they say.
It is. And one thing I'm so grateful for is that you evolve and you take chances with your music and you're honestly, and I'm not saying this to blow smoke up your ass, you are one of my favorite artists, and your music has created such a space of healing for me in so many different areas of my life and times in my life. So I want to thank you as a fan for staying true to you in writing from your soul and creating these stories and narratives that have touched my soul. So thank you so, so much.
Thank you.
And I look forward to spitting on all of your bandmates soon.
I'm next. What were you saying about that? You said something about that. I was in the industry. I was something.
Industry darling?
No, I wasn't an industry darling.
Yeah. And I like, that's my favorite part about you though. Fuck the industry. I feel the same way. You're a rebel in all the right ways. You know, I feel like the types of albums you've put out, your discography and the evolution of your music, it's so creative and individual, and the stories you're telling are important.
Yeah.
The things you're singing about are important, and to put a dope groove to social injustice is who's doing that?
Well, it's,
we got people out here like wop 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 wop. Wait, it's fun. There's a place for that, but your music is important, and I'm just
what I was inspired by. You know, I was inspired by things like that, so that's where I'm sitting. It's a beautiful place to be. You know, everybody has their energy and does what they want to do artistically. So I can't, I know how hard it is to make a big record and to actually get on the charts, because I never got on the charts. So I know how hard it is. So I got to take my hat off whoever has done that.
Even if they're singing about a wet ass pussy, and that's why you are a noble man, and I will be the one to talk shit about it on stage. I will do. You can live vicariously through me. Oh my God, Clarence, I love you so much. I appreciate you taking time out to talk with me. I've been looking forward to this, and I look forward to seeing you live. Tell my fans and your fans where they can find you. Your new album is out. A Pull from Niagara Falls. Where can they find you? Where can they listen to you?
They can see me at citizencope.com and on Instagram, Citizen Cope, Twitter, Citizen Cope, Clubhouse, Citizen Cope.
Clubhouse?
Yeah, I've been rocking the Clubhouse, but mostly I have a cell phone number too. It's all in the bio and everything. So I'll be touring. Best way is just to get on the email list, really, because then you'll really find out what I'm doing, because otherwise it's hard to, you know, get it all out through Instagram and Twitter. You know, they don't let you reach everybody. So.
It sure is. Well, you guys get on the email list. I'll have all the details in the show notes. And I appreciate you so much. I can't wait to see you. Thank you so, so much. And I will bring spit guards for everybody the next time I come out live.
I hope to see you in New York. We'll catch some vegetarian wonton in China.
Yes, I would love some veggie wontons. Absolutely. All right. Well, thank you so much. I will talk to you soon. Thank you.
Great to see you.
Bye.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely.
All right.
Bye, brother.
Bye-bye.
I can't wait for that Sade collab. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, you know, in heaven.
Oh, I got to call somebody. Who knows Sade?
That's going to take Gabriel to hook that one up.
I got to figure it out. Damn it. Love you, brother.
All right. Love you, too.
Bye.